Page 522. We're in book 7, the book of yoga.
And we've reached canto 5, the finding of the soul.
We can start at the back today. Andres, you'll start.
Canto 5, the finding of the soul. Onward she passed, seeking the soul's mystic cave. At first, she stepped into a night of God. The light was quenched that helps the laboring world. The power that struggles and stumbles in our life. This inefficient mind gave up its thoughts. The striving heart its unavailing hopes. All knowledge failed and the ideas formed. And wisdom screaming off her lowly head, feeling a truth too great for thought or speech. Formless, ineffable, forever the same, an innocent and holy ignorance, adored like one who worships formless God, the unseen light she could not claim nor conquer. In a simple purity of emptiness, her mind knelt down before the unknown. All was abolished save her naked self and the prostrate yearning of her surrendered heart. There was no strength in her, no pride of force. The lofty burning of desire had sunk, a shame, a vanity of separate self. The hope of spiritual greatness fled. Salvation she asked not, nor a heavenly crown. Humility seemed now too proud a state. Herself was not, God alone was all. Yet God she knew, but not but only knew he was. A sacred darkness brooded now within. The world was a deep darkness, great and new. This void held more than all the teeming worlds. This blank filled more than all that time has borne. This dark knew dumbly, immensely the unknown. But all was formless, voiceless, infinite.
Thank you. We'll just read on, Mathilde.
As night, a shadow walked in a shadowy scene, a small knot passing through a mightier knot, a night of person in a bare outline, faithfulness in personal night, silent she moved, empty and absolute. In endless time, her soul reached a wide end. The spaceless vast became her spirit's place. At last, a change approached. The emptiness broke. A wave rippled within. The world had steered. Once more, her inner self became her space. There was felt a blissful nearness to the goal. Heaven leaned low to kiss the sacred hill. The air trembled with passion and delight. A rose of splendor on a tree of dreams. The face of dawn out of moon twilight blue. Day came. Christ of the sacrifice of joy into the worshipping silence of her world. He carried immortal lustre as his robe, trailed heaven like a purple scarf, and wore as his vermilion caste mark a red sun.
Thank you. Jenny.
as if an old remembered dream come true, she recognized in her prophetic mind the imperishable loose tree of that sky, the tremendous sweetness of that happy air, and covered from mind's view and life's approach, the mystic cavern in the sacred hill, and knew the dwelling of her secret soul, as if in some Elysian occult depths, the true last retreat from the thoughts propelling touch, as if in a rock petal's solitude here, fast refuge from a ignorant worshipping world, lay withdrawn even from life's inner sense, receding from the entangled heart's desire. A marvelous blooding twilight met the eyes, and the holy stillness held that voiceless space. An awful dimness wrapped the great rock doors, carved in the massive stone of metal's trace. Two golden serpents round the lintel
curled,
enveloping it with their pure and restful strength, look out with wisdom deep and luminous eyes. An eagle covered it with wide conquering wings, frames of self-lost immobile reverie.
Yes, reverie. Read two more lines, please.
Dogs crowd the grey musing cornices, like sculptures, posture of white bosomed peace.
Yes, thank you. Beautiful picture. Tom.
Across thresholds sleep, she entered in and found herself amidst great figures of gods, conscious in stone and living without breath, watching with fixed regard the soul of man, executive figures of the cosmic self, world symbols of immutable potency. On the walls covered with significant shades, looked at her the life scene of man and beast, and the high meaning of the life of gods. The power and necessity of these numberless worlds and faces of beings and stretches of world space spoke the succinct and inexhaustible hieratic message of the climbing planes. In their immensitude, shining infinity, they were the extension of the self of God, and housed, impassively receiving all, his figures and his small and mighty acts, and his passion and his birth and life and death, and his return to immortality, to the abiding and eternal is their climb. To the pure existence everywhere the same, to the sheer consciousness and the absolute force and the unimaginable and formless bliss, to the mirth in time and the timeless mystery of the triune being who is all and one, and yet is no one but himself apart. There was no step of breathing man, no sound, only the living nearness of the soul.
Thank you. Tara.
Yet all the world and God himself were there, for every symbol was a reality and brought a presence which had given it life. All this he saw, and inly felt and knew, not by some thought of mind, but by the self. A light not born of sun or moon or fire, a light that dwelt within and saw within, shedding an intimate visibility, made secrecy more revealing than the word. Our sight and sense are a fallible gaze and touch, and only the spirit's vision is wholly true. As thus she passed in that mysterious place, through room and room, through door and rock-hewn door, she felt herself made one with all she saw. A sealed identity within her walk. She knew herself the beloved of the Supreme. These gods and goddesses were he and she. The mother was she of beauty and the light, the word in Brahma's vast creating class, the world presence on almighty Shiva's lap, the master and the mother of all lives, watching the world their twin regard had made, and Krishna and Radha forever entwined in bliss, the adorer and adored, self lost and one.
Thank you. Larry.
In the last chamber on a golden seat, one sat whose shape no vision could define. Only one felt the world's unattainable fount, a power of which he was a strange force, an invisible beauty, goal of the world's desire, a sun of which all knowledge is a beam, a greatness without whom no life could be. Then soul departed into silent self, and all became formless and pure and bare. Then through a tunnel dug in the last rock, she came out where there shone the sun. A house was there, all made of flame and light, and crossing a wall of doorless living fire, there suddenly she met her secret soul.
Thank you. Would you read?
Again stood it immortal in conscience, restless, belying it with momentary sin, in whose wide eyes of tranquil atness, which pity and sorrow could not abrogate, infinity turned its gaze on finite shapes. Observer of the sudden steps of the hour, eternity upheld the minute acts and the passing scenes of the everlasting play. In the mystery of its selecting will, in the divine comedy, a participant, the spirit's conscious representative, God's delegate in our humanity, comrade of the universe, the transcendent ray, she had come into the mortal body's womb to play a role with time and circumstance. The joy in the world, a master movement here, the passion of the game lighted her eyes. A smile on her lips, welcome us with and grief. Love was a return to pleasure and pain. All things she saw was a masquerade of truth, disguised in the costumes of ignorance, crossing the years of to immortality. All she could front with is a strong space piece.
Thank you.
But since she knows the toil of mind and life, as a mother feels and shares her children's lives, she puts forth a small portion of herself, a being no bigger than the palm of man, into a hidden region of the heart, to face the pain and to forget the bliss, to share the suffering and endure earth's wounds. And labor need the labor of the stars. This in us laughs and weeps, suffers the stroke, exults in victory, struggles for the crown. Identified with the mind and body and life, it takes on itself their anguish and defeat. Breathes with fate's lips and hangs upon the cross. Yet is the unwounded and immortal self, supporting the actor in the human scene. Through this she sends us her glory and her powers, pushes to wisdom's heights, when misery's dark. She gives us strength to do our daily task, and sympathy with heartaches of others' grief, and the little strength we who must steal the role of the universe, acting itself out in a slight human shape, and on our shoulders carry the struggling world. This is in us the Godhead's smile and life. In this human portion of divinity, she seeks the greatness of the soul and time, to uplift from light to light, from power to power, till on a heavenly people stands a king. In body weak, in its heart, and in invincible might, it climbs stumbling, held up by an unseen hand, a toiling spirit in immortal shape. Here in this chamber of flame and light they met. They looked upon each other, knew themselves, the secret and its human part, the calm immortal and the struggling soul. Then with a magic transformation speed, they rushed into each other and grew one.
Thank you.
Once more, she was human upon earthly soil. In the muttering night, amid the rain-swept woods, and the rude cottage where she sat in trance, that subtle world withdrew deeply within, behind the sun veil of the inner sight. But now the half-open lotus bud of her heart had bloomed and stood this close to the earthly ray, and an image shone revealed her secret soul. There was no wall severing the soul and mind, no mystic fence guarding from the claims of life. In its deep lotus home, her being sat, as if on concentration's marble seat, calling the mighty mother of the worlds to make this earthly tenement her house. As in a flash from a supernal light, a living image of the original power, a face, a form came down into her heart, and made of it its temple and pure abode. But when its feet had touched the quivering bloom, a mighty movement wrought the inner space, as if a world were shaken and found its soul. Out of the inconscient, soulless, mindless night, a flaming serpent rose, released from sleep. It rose, billowing its coils, and stood erect, and climbing mightily, stormily on its way, it touched her senses with its flaming mouth, as if a fiery kiss had broken their sleep. They bloomed and laughed, surcharged with life and bliss.
Thank you. Emma.
Then, as the crown rejoined the eternal space, in the flower of the head, in the flower of matter space, in each divine stronghold and legend knot, it held together the mystic scheme which joins the viewless summit with the unseen depth, the stirring of the lake that frail depends, safeguarding us against the enormous world, our lines of self-expression in its past, an innate sap of the original power, wearing the mighty mother's hand and face, armed bearer of the weapon and the sign, which offers mind no magic can imitate. Manifold, yet one she sat, a guardian church, a savior, gesture, strength, stretched her lifted arm, and a symbol of some native cosmic strength. The sacred beast lay torn below her feet, a silent flame, eyes mass of healing force, all underwent a high equestrial change, breaking the black inconscient blind mirror world, appeasing the circle of the ignorance, powers and divinities worth living for. Each part of the being trembling with delight, lay overwhelmed with pride and happiness, and saw her hand in every circumstance, and felt her touch in every time, in every limb and soul.
Thank you. Inu.
In the country of the lotus of the head, which thinking mind has made its busy space, in the castle of the lotus twists the ground, when she shoots the arrows of the sight and will, in the passage of the lotus of the throat, where speech must rise and the expressing mind and the heart's impulse run towards word and act, a glad uplift and a new working change. The immortal thoughts displaced our bounded view. The immortal thoughts, earth's grand idea and sense. All things now bore a deeper, heavenlier sense. The glad, clear harmony marks their true self-line, reset the balance and measures of the world. Each shape showed its occult design, unveiled thought meaning in it, for which it was made, and the vivid splendor of an artist's thought. The channel of the mighty mother's voice, the immortal's will took into its calm control our blind, forgetting government of life. A loose republic once of monster needs, then bound to the uncertain sovereign mind. Life now obeys to a diviner rule, and every act became an act of God. In the kingdom of the lotus of the heart, love chanting its pure and lineal hymn, made life and body mirrors of sacred joy, and all the emotions gave themselves to God.
Thank you. Patty?
In the nebulous, broad interior range, with proud ambition and its master lust, obtained in the instruments of a great psalmist's way, to do a work of God on earthly soil. In the narrow nether center's petty park, its childish game of daily dwarf desire was changed into a sweet and boisterous play, and romp of little gods with light and sound. In the deep place where once the serpent slept, there came a grip on matter's giant powers, for large utilities in life were state. Firm ground was made for heaven's descending might. Behind all reigned her sovereign, deathless rule, casting aside its veil of ignorance, alive to God and cosmic beings and powers, it built the harmony of its human state, surrendered into the great world mother's hands. Only she obeyed her soul's supreme behest in the enigma of the inconstant world.
Thank you. Audrey.
Secret soul defines the chosen all, his master and witness of our ignorant life. Admit the person's look and nature's role. But once the hidden doors are thrown apart, then the veil soon steps out in the front. A light comes down into the room. The petty painful not hastens with grass. The mind becomes a mastered instrument of life, the hue and figure of the soul. All happily grows towards knowledge and towards bliss. The divine process then takes nature's place and pushes the movements of our bodies and minds. Possessor of our passionate hopes and dreams, the beloved, desperate of our thoughts and acts, he streams into us with our unbound force, into mortal wings, the immortal rapture and power. An inner law of beauty shapes our lives. Our words become the natural speech of truth. Each thought is a ripple on the sea of life.
Thank you. Prakash?
Then, sin and virtue leave the cosmic bliss. They struggle no more in our deliberate path. Our acts chime the God's simple natural rule, or serve the rule of eternal right. All moves unlovely, evil and untrue, forsake their station in fierce disarray, and hide their shame in the subconscious dust. Then lifts the mind a cry of victory. O soul, my soul, we have created heaven. Within we have found the kingdom here of God. This fortress built in a loud, ignorant world, our life is entrenched between two rivers of light. We have turned space into a gulf of peace and made the body a capital of bliss. What more must still be done in the slow process of the evolving spirit? In the brief stage between a death and birth, the first perfection stage is reached at last. Out of the wood and stone of our nature's stuff, a temple is shaped where the high gods could live. Even if the struggling world is left outside, wants man's perfection still can save the world. There is all a new proximity to the sky, a first betrothal of the earth to heaven, a deep concordat between truth and light. A camp of God is pitched in human time.
So we can go back to the beginning and look at this wonderful canto, sentence by sentence. Tekeste will read from the beginning. You can't see properly, Helmut.
Onward she passed, seeking the soul's mystic cave. At first she stepped into a night of joy. Light was quenched, but held for the heaven world. The power that struggles and stumbles in our life. This inefficient mind gave up its torch. Driving hard, its unavailing force. All knowledge failed, and the ideas, forms, and distance screamed in awe for a lovely head, giving a truth too great for thought or speech, formless, ineffable, forever the same. An innocent and holy ignorance, adored like one who worships from his God, the unseen light could not claim more.
Thank you. Anything to ask or share about these lines?
I have a question about line 5, the word this.
This inefficient mind, this human mind.
That is it pointing to one of the things in rule 1-4, or can I mean to the?
Yes. Well, we can say that the light that helps the laboring world is maybe this inefficient mind. Maybe, yes. And there's the life power that struggles and stumbles in our life, no? So this is an experience that several great mystics have spoken about. That when they approach the discovery of the divine, it's as if they pass through a darkness where nothing is known. Some have referred to it as the cloud of unknowing. Or here he says, the night of God. So all the usual lights and powers that help us, they fail. No? The heart, with all its longings and efforts, it gives up those useless hopes. You come into a state where it's as if everything you know is actually meaningless. All forms of the idea. So even the power of wisdom, which is a great divine power, actually, but that wisdom also covers her head, her lowly head. She feels very humble. No? She feels the presence of a truth that is too great for thought or speech. A truth that's formless, ineffable, beyond all power of expression, forever the same. So Savitri is in this state, and it's so beautifully described in the next three lines. An innocent and holy ignorance. It's a very sacred, special precious state, this state of unknowing, of ignorance, which is worshipping this unseen light. That she can't claim for herself, doesn't belong to her, it is something far beyond. No? And he says, this state is like those who worship formless God. When here in India we are all, each of us, allowed to have our own Ishta Devata, our own chosen form of God, the one, the form of the divine that we feel most connected to, that we worship spontaneously. But there are few great souls who have rejected all those forms. They feel that the one they worship is unknowable and beyond all forms. It's something like that. Patricia.
In a simple purity of emptiness, her mind melts down before the unknown. All was abolished save her naked self and the prostrate yearning of her surrendered heart. There was no strength in her, no pride of force. The lofty burning of desire had sunk, ashamed, a vanity of separate self. The hope of spiritual greatness then. Salvation she asked not, nor a heavenly crown. Humility seemed now too proud a state. Herself was nothing. God alone was all. Yet God she knew not, but only knew he was.
Thank you. He says the lofty burning of desire had sunk ashamed. But I think this is not the ordinary yearnings and cravings that we call desire. This is really an aspiration for something higher, you know, a divine desire. But even that flame of aspiration now seems like an unworthy asking or wanting something for oneself. So that's all gone. She's not hoping anymore for spiritual greatness. She's not asking for salvation. Hope of a heavenly crown. All that has gone. And even to feel humble, that also can be, you know, something egoistic in it. Yeah. So all that's gone. Herself was nothing. God alone was all. But she doesn't know what he is. No. She only knows that he exists.
And it sounds very mysterious together with the state of this humility and
Which line?
Yet God she knew not, but only knew he was.
Yes. This is the unseen light she could not claim or own. You read, Margaret? Yes.
Sacred darkness brooded now within. The world was a deep darkness, gray and mute. This void held more than all the teeming worlds. This blank felt more than all that time has borne.
softly, immensely, the unknown. But all was formless, voiceless, infinite. As might a shadow walk in a shadowy sea, a small knot passing through a mighty unknown, a night of person in a bare outline, crossing a fathomless impersonal night, silent she moved, empty and absolute. In endless time, her soul reached a wide end. The spaceless vast became her spirit's place.
Thank you. A sacred darkness brooded now within. This is within Savitri, within herself, within her being. There's this sacred darkness. And it brooded. It's surprising how often Sri Aurobindo uses this verb in the poem. And here it seems to be specially pregnant. The images of a mother bird on her eggs. She's looking after them, keeping them warm until it's time for something to hatch, to come out. So in this silent darkness, there's a sense that something is going to be born, something is going to emerge, no? And this is a very, very special darkness. Savitri feels not only within herself, but as if the whole world, the whole universe, is a deep darkness. Everything is in that darkness. That dark emptiness, in fact. But this emptiness, which she feels in herself and in the darkened universe, it holds in it more than all the teeming worlds. Teeming is what ants do. They spread all over, millions and millions and millions of them. So in the vastness of the manifestation, there are so many worlds, and they are all full of so many beings. They are teeming with life and movement and activity. But now all that has become dark and still, but in that darkness and that emptiness, there's more than in all those teeming worlds. And this blank that is Savitri is feeling more than all that time has known. All that has been experienced in all the eons of endless time. There's something in this darkness within herself that knows the unknown, dumbly, immensely. But it's all formless, voiceless, it can't be expressed. It's infinite. This is an amazing brooding state which contains immense possibility. And in that state she feels herself moving. There's a movement. As if she's just a shadow moving through a shadowy scene. She's a small knot passing through a much bigger nothingness. A night of person in a bare outline, as if all her personality has become darkened, non-existent, shadowy. But there's just an outline that retains or contains the individuality. And that dark little shadow is crossing this fathomless, impersonal night. Silent she moved, empty and absolute. And then she reaches an end. There does come an end to the movement. In endless time, her soul reached a wide end, a vastness, the spaceless vast. It's not the vastness of universal space, it's something vaster becomes the place where her spirit dwells, lives. She remains in that emptiness and that silence and that darkness for some time.
A question came up when Savitri walked behind Satyavan and Bess. What this is, is there a correlation between this, or is this a part of it, or? I mean, they are walking also through the dark paths.
There's a resemblance in the image, but I think the experience is completely different.
Because she handled everything. She could, goes through it.
That comes after this. No, now she's experiencing this nearness to the soul. No? I think it's a completely different experience. In a way, what she experiences in books 9 and 10, they don't have this reality. These are unreal worlds that death has projected, symbol worlds, for her to have certain experiences. This is something different. I think this is the absolute, or very, very close to the absolute reality.
I'm wondering whether it has some correlation with Asopati's experience of nirvana before he
meets the mother. Yes. An absolutely convincing state, no, of the unknowable. But even beyond that, there's something. At last, a change approached. The emptiness broke. A wave rippled within. The world had stirred. Once more, her inner self became her space. There was felt a blissful nearness to the goal. Heaven leaned low to kiss the sacred hill. The air trembled with passion and delight. A rose of splendor on a tree of dreams, the face of dawn out of moon twilight grew. Day came. Priest of a sacrifice of joy into the worshipping silence of her world. He carried immortal luster as his robe, trailed heaven like a purple scarf, and wore as his vermilion caste mark a red sun. As if an old remembered dream come true, she recognized in her prophetic mind the imperishable luster of that sky, the tremulous sweetness of that happy air, and covered from mind's view and life's approach, the mystic cavern in the sacred hill, and knew the dwelling of her secret soul. If I go back to Margaret's question, I could say that out of every darkness which is described in this poem, light emerges. And here we see it happening again, out of that darkness and emptiness. But each of these is a different experience. And all of these experiences, they are summed up in a Vedic image which corresponds to one of the versions of the riddle of the Sphinx. You know, the Sphinx poses you this a question that you must be able to answer, otherwise you can't proceed on your journey, you may not even survive. And the usual answer is that the answer is man, the human being. But there's another version of the riddle which says that there are two sisters and each gives birth to the other. So it's night and dawn, or night and day. So that's a very, very fundamental truth, that each darkness we experience, whatever kind of darkness it is, brooding within it is the possibility of a dawn. And that's a saving truth to remember. And so here there's that experience is expressed in another way. It happens repeatedly in the poem. Wherever there's a darkness, it's very, very vividly and intensely and powerfully expressed right from the first line of the poem. Again and again it comes. But these darknesses are all different. Each of them is a different experience. And each dawn is a different level of experience, too.
So Asya Padilesya, to go in the deepest darkness and then go up.
Yes.
That's very, very beautiful.
So here it's very, very beautiful, no? She's been in that vast emptiness. And then the time has come, something, she's moved and she's come to an end. And something changes. A wave rippled. Something moves. And she returns to a sense of her own inner self. And there she feels this blissful nearness, that anticipation that now it is very, very close. And there's a special atmosphere. Heaven leaned low to kiss the sacred hill. We can think that this sacred hill is earth, with all its possibilities. And the air is trembling with passion and delight. And then there comes the dawn, the face of dawn. And it doesn't come out of complete darkness, it comes out of a beautiful twilight with a moon. Day comes, and he's a priest, he's bringing a sacrifice of joy that will have its result. And she recognizes all this. She recognizes that the light of that sky, that the special delicate, tremulous sweetness of that air, and she recognizes the hill that the life and the mind don't notice, don't see, that's veiled from them. It's the hill, the sacred hill, where's the mystic cavern, where the soul dwells.
looking at this once more, her inner self became her space.
Yes, because she'd been in that state of complete blankness and emptiness and vastness where she felt as if she didn't exist. She's just a shadow, a nothingness. But she returns to the sense of herself, as if that experience of the unknowable has been something she had to pass through in order to be able to come deep enough into her inner space to reach the mystic cavern in the sacred hill.
Shakti and Purushana, how is ya also the relation? Well, then in the Shakti, then goes the consciousness stirs out.
You mean it's another one of these pairs?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And this, the one and the other is depending on each other.
Yeah. I think we could stop there today. Yeah. Mother, there are several pictures. This means there are several passages that Mother has read. We can six. We can listen to six.
I know where it starts. That onward she passed, no?
Yeah.
And then you say stop,
no? No, we'll hear six passages. Jumping. Sorry.
It's a prayer.
It doesn't like this rainy weather. While Margaret's doing that, today we have these glorious flowers here. It has such an exquisite fragrance. Mother has named this supramental psychological perfection. So we will go away and nobody will be here. I think each of us can take one of these away with us to cherish it for the rest of the day. Take the fragrance with us. As you leave, you can take one.
Onward she passed, seeking the soul's mystic gaze. At first, she stepped into a night of dawn, the face of dawn out of moon twilight gold. Day came, priest of a sacrifice of joy into the water. worshipping silence of her world, he gained a mortal luster as his robe, trailed heaven like a purple scarf, and wore as his vermilion calf mark a red sun. An awful dimness wrapped the great rock door, carved in the massive stone of matter's heart. Two golden serpents round the lintel curved, enveloping it with their pure and dreadful strength, looked out with wisdom's deep and luminous eyes. An eagle covered it with wide conquering wings. Flames of self-lost immobile reverie, those crowded the grey musing cornices like sculptured postures of white bosomed peace. Across the threshold sleep, she entered in and found herself amid great figures of God, conscious in stone and living without breath, watching with fixed regard the soul of man, executive figure of the cosmic set, world symbol of immutable potency. In the last chamber, on a golden seat, one sat, whose shape no vision could define. Only one felt the world's unattainable power, a power of which she was a strange force. An invisible beauty, goal of the world's desire, a sun of which all knowledge is deep, a greatness without whom no life could be. Then all departed into a silent sect, and all became a formless and pure and bare. Then through a tunnel dug in the last rock, she came out where there shone a deathless sun. A house was there, all made of flame and light, crossing a wall of doorless living fire. There, suddenly, she met her secret.
Thanks to Shobindo.